if there's a painting that's caught your attention, that it stopped you, you're interested, you know, you're looking at it, you want to know, and then you go to that little plaque at the side, you want more. You're at that stage where you want more information. It's always a bit disappointing if the title just says untitled 1X or something. I was just going to think, oh, come on. Hello and welcome to Art Juice. This is honest, generous and humorous conversations that will feed your creative soul and get you thinking with me, Alice Sheridan.
And me, Louise Fletcher.
I nearly forgot my name there, so this is going to be a really good episode. This is episode 95 and we are going to be talking all the things, finishing, titling, finishing, framing, presenting, packaging. We're going to cram it all in. So I hope that this is going to give you a lot to think about and hopefully some ideas of things that perhaps you haven't considered. But first of all, let me know, how has your week been since we last spoke?
A good week. It's been a super busy week. With my membership group, I always do something new each month, and so when I get to the end of a month, I'm preparing content for them for the coming month. So I always forget that that's a lot more than I think it is.
Yeah.
So it's been busy, and I'm also trying to do a little bit of writing every day. I think I've set myself too many things. I'm trying to do a little bit of writing every day on my book idea. I'm trying to learn InDesign so that I can put together at least a rough proof of it to show somebody. And I'm trying to make sure I get enough studio time in. So I've been busy, but I've been working on 4 large paintings in my new way. And last week you asked me what's different about the way I'm painting. Mm. And you do this, you ask me a question that I'm not expecting, and then I have no idea and I have to think. So all
you
week
do that,
I
is that a really annoying thing when you have a conversation and you think of the perfect answer when it's finished?
No, it's not annoying, but it's like, I just know I'm never equipped because it's so much intuitive and feeling that I have to think in, I don't put things into words until I've gone through them slowly in my head. So anyway, I thought about it all week as I was painting and kind of noted what's different and also noted where I was slipping back into my old ways.
Yeah.
And so what's different is when I'm succeeding in what I want to achieve, I'm working much faster. I'm doing a lot of loose drawing. I'm scraping back layers. So there has to be a lot of layers.
Yeah.
And I'm using a lot of different types of paint application that I've not done. So I'm monoprinting onto the surface. I'm stenciling, I'm writing, I'm drawing in charcoal. I'm using Stabilo woodies and Neo colors. And I'm using my hands a lot to paint.
Mm.
And when I am succeeding, I'm not doing anything that I don't love doing.
Mm.
And when I'm slipping back into my old ways, I'm starting to have other people's voices in my head. Well, you really shouldn't have that, or, you know, maybe you should just tone that down a bit. And so it occurred to me, it's really about self-acceptance.
Yeah.
And that's what painting is really when we're doing it our own way, I think. So that's what's been different. And so I've noticed myself this week going in and out of when I'm doing it the way I want to, and when I'm slipping back into trying to control things too quickly, trying to make a finished painting too quickly, trying to follow what I think other people want. But the end result of it was that I did finish a painting this week that I absolutely love. And it's another one that kind of revealed itself rather than I had any plan for it.
Mm.
And even the title came, which we'll talk about. The title kind of came to what, about 2/3 of the way through, and then I knew what it was about. So really, that's been, it's been a really good week. I just think I need to slow down a bit.
slow down a bit. But it's interesting, isn't it? I think often it is self-acceptance, but it's also, we are just in a hurry to reach a culmination, an end point. And actually what we're talking about is the journey of getting there. That's where all the juicy bit lies, isn't it?
But yeah, and
we,
all
but then we also want that satisfaction of finishing something. So it's a difficult thing.
And you don't want to walk in and see, like I can see at the moment, a horror show, literally a horror show. You've got to accept it's okay to walk in and look at a horror show for a while.
Yeah.
And even make it more of a horror show before I start sorting it out.
But and that's where I think the confidence comes from. When you walk in and you see a horror show, it's not letting that destabilize you. It's going, right, okay, well, so if it's horror show, why? What next? What do I want to do next? And keep it moving.
That's the fun part. You were doing a lot of painting by the look of it. I saw on Instagram.
Yeah, well, I had a few days. I had a few days away, which, and I just deliberately, so if you're waiting for an email from me, I'm sorry, I will get to it. But I deliberately, because if I'm not careful, I can go away and I can still carry on doing catch-up work, admin, emails, you know, preparing, think of some ideas for this kind of thing, like you're talking about. And I thought, no, this time I really am going to, I'm going to have a break. I'm going to read and really just not think about things. And it felt so good. It was really nice. The weather forecast was terrible. It was like rain. And then we were blessed with some fantastic, gorgeous weather in amongst the rain. And I kind of didn't want to come home back to real life, which is always the marker of a good breakaway. It felt like a lot longer than whatever it was, 4 days. And I came back and I thought, right, I'm going to the studio early tomorrow morning. And I was there early. And I had a little review. I had a rejig. So I walked in. I had that thing, like you say, where you walk in and you think, is it going to be a horror show? And I have a thing that I do where I draw thumbnails of paintings just to help me kind of align them in my own mind where I've got to. So I did that and I realized that actually there was a group that were they're not in the middle stages anymore. They're beginning to get to the end stages anymore. So that felt okay, but I didn't really want to work on them that day. So I started working on some just totally new things. And it was really good fun. So there's a little Instagram story about it. And I thought afterwards, it's funny, I thought afterwards, oh, I should have recorded that from the beginning. But genuinely, I tell you, there was, at the beginning, there was nothing there. And even though I'd started these panels with an idea of, okay, I'm actually going to, and this is probably the first time I've done this, work from those mini sketches, mini things that I'd done, just as a starting point. The first part was really slow and frustrating. I think when I was trying to maybe replicate those too closely, and it would have been very easy at that point to pack up and go home and say, that was not a good day. And as it was, I just, when I kind of loosened and relaxed a little bit and just thought, fine, but well, they're obviously not going to be the same, but what is it that you're trying to do with these? And really, I don't want to use the word play because it doesn't feel like it was play. It felt like I was working quite hard to take it to the next level, but then I realized that the time had totally gone and I totally lost myself in it. So from that point, it was play. And it's just that discovery, isn't it? And I don't know, you know, there was some lovely fluid stuff. I've got, everybody's telling me I need to get glazing medium. So I've got to buy glazing medium next for the fluid. But what was interesting is I was working on the flat. I've done a lot of working with fluid paint vertically in the last year or so. And because these are smaller, I was working with them on the flat. And that's quite good fun. And I can see that I've got some big ones that I want to start that I will do a lot of. I'll push two tables together and maybe work on those flat on the tables or on the floor. So it's really kind of got me triggered into feeling excited about new things, but then I've got these ones to finish off and I don't want to lose that excitement, but they have a very different feel. I'm looking at the ones that need to be finished and there's a degree of softness to them, which I want to keep, whereas these new ones feel more energetic. So it's very interesting how you do get these different bodies that have different feelings to them. So yeah, it was a good week this week. And then I've got something else I can tell you about and what's inspired.
Ooh. Well, what was interesting to me was watching the Instagram video. You was panning across them before you, and then you went and talked about each one. And there was one that I was like, ooh, I love that one. And then you got to it and you went, and this one's the least one I like least. And I was like, oh, that's the one I like best. And I realized you're always going to paint over the things I love because you painted over my pink one as well.
I did. Sorry.
But that is so, I was saying this last night to my group because we had a Q&A session, that this is the thing. They're asking me for feedback on their, we were doing exercise on composition and they were asking for feedback, but not telling me what they wanted.
Yeah.
So they were just saying, how's this? And I was saying, I don't know, because what do you want it to be? What do you want? Because what I want from it is irrelevant, really, unless you tell me.
Exactly.
I might say that's way too bold and there's way too much value contrast. And you might say, yeah, but that's exactly what I'm going for. So it's all about, it's so personal. It doesn't mean there aren't good and bad paintings. I thought all those paintings looked great. There was just one that personally appealed to me the most, and it was the one that personally appealed to you the least. And that's just how it is.
And I think that's why it's so important, when I kind of hesitated about this, you know, play work stage thing, is that I think it's such an important stage to do that, to, because it is so easy to say, oh, here it is, what do you think? And I think that's a cop-out, actually, because you've got to do this for yourself and your own work. You've got to identify what is it. And it's not, what is it for all my work that I'm going to do from now to eternity? It's, what do I want to do on this? But what is interesting me in this painting? What do I want to take in this painting and, you know, nourish it and nurture it and let it flourish and let that be the key point? And how does that fit within this group as a whole? And it's those kind of conversations that you either do with other people, if they're the people who are going to nudge you and push you to the right questions, or you have to do it yourself with your paintings. With, like, there's a section in my membership, isn't it, called Talk to Your Paintings. And it's talking to your paintings, and it's listening to what they say as well. And you just have to have that little stage, because otherwise, I certainly, for me, I can get very bound up, and it can be great fun in playing with the materials and doing all the things and creating something that feels fun, and then you stand back and you think, whoa, what, that's not really what I wanted. So then you've got to have that stage where you kind of clarify it. So all good, keeps us on our toes. Right, so today's topic then is finishing and presenting our work. We've had various listener questions in, so we're going to work through them all. So we're going to be talking, let's just go from the beginning. So Caroline asking about titles. Are they important, and how do we pick them? What's your approach to titles? Because I have a few.
Well, first, I think, yes, they're so important. So important. I learned this from Nicholas Wilton, actually, on a free video he did on YouTube once, where he talked about that. Imagine a title as a second painting. So people look at the painting, then they look down at the title, and they should get a second experience of the painting in some way or another. They shouldn't see a repeat of what they've looked at. So if it's a vase of flowers, it shouldn't be called vase of flowers, because then, okay, well, I can see it's a vase of flowers. And that, when I read that, I kind of felt that intuitively and instinctively, but it really cemented it for me how important it is. So I take them very seriously. But what's interesting is sometimes, at the best times, the title comes, like it did with this painting I'm just working on. The title just kind of manifests itself in my brain at some point, and then I know it's definitely time not to mess with that painting too much and just to refine it. That's my favorite, when that happens, because then I'm like, yes, I know this is finished.
It's that direction thing again, isn't it? Is that it gives it... You've got a degree of clarity at that point. You know what it is.
And in this case, when the title came, actually, it made me add a new color, because I thought, so it has to feel like a fairly cool painting, where a lot of mine are warmer, and it has to be muted down. So I need to mix something different. So that was brilliant. But that doesn't always happen, and that worries me a bit when it doesn't happen, because then I think, is it really finished because the title didn't appear? But I go ahead and I try and come on with something. And so my go-to solutions are lines from poems, although I don't know that many poems, but I look up and I Google and look at poems, sometimes music lyrics, often things people have said. So I have in my notebook, I have a page where I just write things down. If I hear a song lyric or if someone says a phrase or if I read something in a book and I think, oh, yeah, that's a good phrase.
The radio is great for that. I've got a title of a painting and it's waiting for the painting. And the title is Even People in a Coma Yawn.
Oh, that's good.
Isn't that good? And it was from some documentary that I was listening to on Radio 4 one day. And I just thought, oh, that there's just something in that. And I don't know what it is. But yeah, listening to radio is really good for those little phrases.
Well, I have one from a song by a band called Dawes, D-A-W-E-S, called, and the song is called Too Green to Be Blue. And it's this woman says to this man, you're too green to be blue. And he says, and I realized later on, you were right, I was. And I thought, oh, that's great for a painting, too green to be blue. But I've never had a painting that even closely comes, you know, anywhere near. So if anyone wants to take that title, go ahead.
So have you got pages in notebooks? I must have a page in every single notebook that I've got that says painting titles. And then occasionally I go through and I think, oh, I use that one, or I use that one something quite close without actually checking back to your notes. That's the other thing that I find. It's a bit like sketchbooks in general. You do something in a sketchbook, you totally forget about it. Your work goes off in another direction. And then you look back at it and you think, look, I had that idea 18 months ago. And it somehow settled in my subconscious and came out. And the same thing happens with titles too. What about, do you think the idea of having a secondary layer to a title is more important for abstract work? Do you think it's as necessary with figurative work?
All I can say, not being a figurative painter, is I love it myself when I look at a figurative painting and it has an interesting title. It has a title that, and I can't think of an example just right off the top of my head, but they'll have a title that's something that tells you there's another story there. Mm. Rachel Davis is very good at this. We talked about last week. I don't mean to keep talking about Rachel. She's not paying me. But I was just thinking, she's got this series of work about her mum. And they've got titles. So they're figurative paintings of people, but they've got titles. One was She Didn't Know. There's a picture of her mother and father standing on a beach in bathing suits. And then it says, She Didn't Know, or She Didn't Know Yet. And she said, people ask her, she didn't know what? Well, she didn't know she was pregnant. Is the reason for the title. But that's a good title because now it's intriguing more than just looking at a painting of two people. If it said mum and dad on the beach in, you know, California, that's not very exciting.
It's always disappointing, isn't it? I find it, I'll tell you a little bit more about my gallery visit yesterday later. But, you know, when you're in a gallery or when you're, if there's a painting that's caught your attention, that it's stopped you, you're interested, you know, you're looking at it, you want to know, and then you go to that little plaque at the side, you want more. You're at that stage where you want more information. It's always a bit disappointing if the title just says untitled 1X or something. I was just kind of thinking, oh, come on. Maybe this is a modern day thing. Maybe this is a modern day, we have to present it. We have to tell this story. And, you know, maybe if you get to the elevated heights of having your work in, then you don't care. You're just like, it's a painting, make of it what you will. It's up to you, call it what you want.
That brings up a point about titles when you say make of it what you will. So there are titles, I like the titles where you can make of it what you will, but I have wondered, and I've had people ask me this question, and I've never been sure what's good or bad, really. People saying, let's say you do semi-abstract or abstract landscapes, and is it a good idea then to not let it be whatever it is, but to actually tell people where it is from a marketing perspective? So would it be a good idea for me to say, you know, evening walk to Pinner, that's a place near me, people near me would know where that is, people have done that walk, they know what the light's like at that time of night. Does that make someone want to buy the painting?
Yes.
So, but I've not done it because I always feel like, but then it's just a bit boring.
I think you're right. I don't think there's a clear answer to that. All I can say is, from experience, people have definitely bought paintings because of place associations, either that they see in the work or that they see in the work after conversation. Or I'm just trying to think if it's there in titles. I don't think I put specific place references in painting titles ever. And often people make a different link. So somebody will say, oh, well, it's interesting because you go to this part of the world, but I spent my childhood in that part of England and I still see the connection. So that's why I'm buying the painting, because it's reminding me of my feeling from actually a totally different location. And maybe if it was geographically specific in the title, that would actually stop them doing that.
Yeah.
It's definitely a consideration. What about long or short? Because I go through two phases. So sometimes I have I've had a series where I do single word titles. I have some that are a little bit like more descriptive and more playful. Like there was one that I titled "Come in Number 9" because it just reminded me of those pedalo boats that you used to go out in, used to hire for half an hour, and then they'd call at you across the lake. And you know, so there's more of a story behind that. And then sometimes it's short phrases. Do you have a preference for long or short? And do you work in series and kind of keep them together with one approach, or do you mix them all up?
No, I actually, in the past, I've mixed them up. Obviously, this new series is going to have more titles that are related to the poems. But normally, I've just mixed them up. I think that's just my lack of organisation, though. It sounds like a good idea to do them, you know, in the way you're saying. It's just that I never have. I've just always had that thing of, oh, that's the title. That's what it's going to be. And so I just use that title.
Yeah. I had but a little group.
That's one other thing, though. If we're doing poems or song lyrics or radio show titles, what's the copyright issues there? Because I've wondered about that.
I would be careful with the title of a
of a song. Or so I'm trying to think of an example. So if you did a painting called Born to Run, not that Bruce Springsteen would take any interest in what I'm doing with his song titles, but if he wanted to, could he sue me? Because he can't own the phrase Born to Run. He can own all the song lyrics.
You can't own words. And there's also something about copyrights, and I haven't looked into it, but there's something about copyrights in specific situations. So if I was going to bring out another music album called Born to Run, I might have problems with it, or a musical.
Yes.
But I think perhaps using those words as a painting title are slightly different. I don't know totally the answer to that, but I mean, you can't copyright everybody from using an entire word. So
no. So anyway, interesting. So let's move on. Otherwise we'll be here all day if we go through each of these in this much detail.
Okay. So titles, and also the titles might, as you say, come before or after. And I think some people start right at the beginning with titles, don't they? They use it as a lead in for their work.
Yes.
So they'll do something that, you know, prompts the ideas beforehand, and they'll come up with the titles first. So that's just another way to think about it. It's not been something that I've ever done. But suits some people. Okay, so assuming that we've got it then done and finished and titled, finishing and sealing, what was the question particular from Helen? Do you remember? Or was she just asking, what did we do? What was our process?
How do you finish and seal a painting?
Well, it depends what substrate it's on for me. So if it's canvas, it's pretty simple. I use a Winsor & Newton satin varnish, two layers, paint it on, done. On canvas. If it's on a very large wooden panel, I do the same thing. If it's on a smaller panel, then I put a coat of GAC 100 over first, and then I do self-leveling gel and wax, which anybody who's done CVP is shown in great detail how you do that. I actually do it slightly differently. So self-leveling gel, you can get them or it's leveling gel medium. I can't remember what the name of it is now. And it's an acrylic medium and it's designed to be put on really quite thick. And it settle. So it takes a little bit of time to dry, and it will settle rather than holding its form. So any normal gel medium, if you put it on with a brush, it will hold the brush strokes, whereas leveling gel is designed to kind of soften and sort of melt a little bit. So you have to have a very flat surface. You have to have a very clean room. So don't do it where there's dust, because you've got to leave it horizontal to dry if you're doing it like that. So any dust in the air is going to settle into it. So it can be a little bit tricky. And I also personally don't like that quite thick, smooth finish. I just don't like it. That a painting for me is about the texture and the marks that have gone into creating it, and I don't want all of those to be hidden, but I do quite like the thickness a little bit. So I do put it on with a brush, not too thick, so I retain some of the brush marks, but it also gives a little bit of thickness to the surface of the painting. So I don't use it how it's supposed to be used, and I do that on anything up to about 60 centimeter, gets that treatment, and then it's a bit shiny and the wax just takes the shine down. So that's my different approaches to finishing. You're basically looking at something that is going to unify the surface finish of the painting, because with depending on whether you've used medium or water, or you've mixed in gels, particularly with acrylics, you can get a different surface shine. So any varnish will harmonize it. It'll kind of homogenize the surface a bit, as well as protect the painting. It's the other thing. When I first started, I didn't use a varnish because I didn't even know about it.
No. Well, I was just thinking, apart from using GAC 100, I use gloss medium for my first thing, then leveling gel thin also, but in a couple of coats. I wait until the thin coat's dry, and then I put another coat on, because there's too many problems when you use it thick.
Then
I put wax on. However, there's a couple of caveats to this that I've learned by trial and error. When I'm selling online, I don't do that until I've sold it, because the wax is a nightmare to get off. Absolute nightmare. Mineral spirits or white spirits, a sander, cloths, and then you think you've got it all off, you paint over and the paint flakes off because you left a bit. It's terrible, I find, to get off. So if I think I might not sell it, and I might change my mind about it a year later. So unless they're going to a show or somewhere physical, and mine are usually going online, then I'm not doing the finishing until after it's sold. And that makes me feel easier that I can just keep coming in and painting over and do what I want in the meantime. So that was one caveat.
The only thing about that is you do need quite a bit of time for the wax to dry fully before you wrap and pack it. So
yes, I do let people know, yeah, you're going to need to give me a little bit of time for it to, because also the leveling gel has to dry.
Yeah. So you're talking about 4 days, aren't you, in that process, minimum?
Yeah. The last one that I sold, the one I mentioned, because I haven't been selling anything, and I sold something that I then said, oh, I wish I hadn't. I think she waited a week, and I told her it'll be a week, and I went away, actually. I left it to set while I went away, to cure, I suppose you call it. The other thing that I've learned through hard trial and error is don't do the sealing until you photographed it, because... The shininess, even with the wax surface, is still a bit of a sheen on it, and it's very hard to photograph it properly after you've done that.
Yeah, that's true. So it's another thing to build in, particularly if you're having work photographed for prints. The kind of timing towards the end is quite complicated with all of these things. So yeah, very good questions about all of those. And that then leads us on to framing. Which obviously happens after you've done the finishing and the sealing, but possibly, and then before you've done the photography or after you've done the photography. So you've got to kind of wiggle all of these things in together, because you want to have photographs of framed work, but you also want to have a photograph of just the image itself, perhaps before you've even done the finishing and the sealing. Framing's a tricky one, isn't it? Because a lot of, you know, work basically does look better framed. I think it feels more complete, but it's also very personal. And I have certainly in the past not bought things because I don't like the way they're framed. So when we're on the other end of it, I think it's a very difficult thing. Sometimes people want it to be done. They just want it to be ready to go. And there's a huge, huge benefit in just that convenience that they just get it, they hang it up, it's all wired, everything is done, ready on the back. To hang up and go. But framing is a big deal, particularly if at the if you're going to a high street framer, it's expensive. Framing is expensive. At any stage, framing can be expensive.
And if you work on paper, it can get really pricey. And my only framing I had to do this year was when I had the piece in the show in London and I had to take it to be framed. And I've said before, I wasn't smart enough to enter a small piece. I entered a big piece, full-size sheet of watercolor paper, which then had to be framed behind glass. And it's the trade framer that I know, he won't take just one picture. So I had to take it just to, and I'm not a regular enough customer of his that I could expect him to make an exception. So I had to take it to my lovely high street framer, but that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And if you've got a whole series of work on paper that you now have to get framed for a show in the days when we have shows again, if we do have shows again, then that is something to really take into consideration on pricing. And this idea that work on paper should be less expensive than work on, which I just do not understand or agree with. But if that's the perception, then you've got to take that into account as well, because not only is it more expensive to frame, but you can't charge as much for it.
Yeah. It's and also you've got whole issues with shipping anything that's glass, which I've never done. I've never sent anything with glazing.
No, I haven't.
I know people do, and I know that they, if you can really protect it with really kind of bouncy foam around the edges, so people do it. You can use really good quality, I think it's acrylic rather than perspex actually, but it can scratch really easily. So that's the disadvantage of that over glass. And it's also actually more expensive. So it's a consideration, but I do think framing does help to sell things. So one solution that I often do is if I'm doing work on paper, I will get one framed so that I can photograph it as a visual, and I will ask the framer not to tape the back in, and then I can either physically replace it with another piece of work as a visual, or I take a photograph of the frame empty and I can drop in Photoshop, superimpose the image on the top of the paperwork.
That's a good idea. I was just going to say that one issue that I've had with framing is when I first started selling my work, I've changed substrates over and over again. And so I was working on thin panels to begin with. And then I had to come up with a way of framing them. And this was before I had an artist community to go talk to. And I didn't think of the very obvious solution of putting batons on the back and lifting the panel up so it could go in a tray frame. I don't think I even knew tray frames existed, to be honest. And so I had my joiner friend make all my frames for me, and he made beautiful, like really beautiful, unique and individual frames to fit each of these thin panels. So they were like just a slight raise up, and so the panel fitted in and was on a level with the frame, and they looked beautiful. And I had a show in a local small gallery at that point and sold nearly everything. And the woman who ran the place told me that I don't think she meant to insult me, but she said, the paintings are lovely, but I think the frames were just as important as the paintings, because everyone said, oh, what a beautiful frame. But that was not cost effective, and nor does that person want to make picture frames. So I changed to wooden panels, and then I began by just buying from like Easy Frame or wherever pre-made floater frames. So that's very simple and straightforward. And people were okay with those. I don't think anyone bought the paintings for the frames, but they still look better in those simple floater frames. But you've done a lot more with more elaborate types of framing and more creative types of framing than I have. You've kind of redesigned your frames quite a bit and had nice different colors. I tend to go for simple white, floater frame, partly because, as you said, I think people can take it out then. and have it done in whatever way they want. If they don't like the way I've done it, it's just a few screws in the back and they can remove it. And but you, yeah, you've done some nice things. You had those St. Ives frames, and you've done...
Yeah, that was a while ago. So I had St. Ives frame. So that has a kind of inside frame and then a flat space and then another frame around the outside. I used those a while ago, and then there were getting to be quite a lot of them around. So I thought I want to do something different. So I do simple tray frames. I do sometimes paint them, but very much depending on what the individual painting needs. I very rarely go for pure white. Never, in fact. I don't like pure white. It's too stark with the kind of colours that I use. So I prefer something that's a little bit off. So I end up painting those myself. But yeah, it's like everything else. I like to keep bringing the changes slightly. When I get bored of seeing work a certain
way. Then you
have
to change it.
Yeah.
When I had, there was a commission I did of two paintings, and the guy loved them. He came to look at them and he said, yes, I love them. Could you frame them though? And I like the simple floater frames that you have. So I said, yes, I could frame them and an added cost. But then he wanted a specific color from the painting to be the frame color. Fine as far as it goes, but this is a word of warning to people as well. The color was, I very rarely use a mixed gray. I mix my own grays, but this was a lovely gray I'd been sent, just one tube of it, from somebody, and I'd used it in his painting, and it was a lovely soft gray, but I'd used it all up, and now he wanted the frame in that color and I didn't have any of it left, and it was from America, so I couldn't get any more. So I managed to squeeze the tiny bit I had left onto a piece of paper, paint it out, take it to the hardware store, get them to color match as close as possible, and then paint the frame. So it was a bit of a nightmare, really. So if you're going to offer to paint frames for people, just make sure you've got enough of the colour that you actually need.
Yeah, it's worth having some consistency. So although I'm saying I changed my mind, I do change my mind, but within a group, it's worth having some consistency, because whether you're going to a trade framer, you're more likely to get a discount if you're doing multiples of things the same. So that works. Try to stick to some similar sizes, similar frame profiles, that kind of thing, because in the long run it's going to suit you better. Have a look around. I remember years ago and just going to my high street framer, and the costs were just so high. I just thought, it's just not feasible. And I think in those days we still had yellow pages. Remember yellow pages?
Let your fingers do the walking. No,
yellow pages was a great big directory that used to come through the door with tiny, tiny little print of all the businesses in your area, and you'd look everybody up on this very fine yellow, flimsy paper. And I think I went through there. I think it was even it can't have been pre-internet days. But I think it must have been. I don't remember Googling this company. And I found a trade framer in an industrial estate up in North London, and went to see him, and he made me the most fantastic frame. So don't be afraid to look and ask. You know, they're out, you know, people who do this, they're out there and they want your business. So do ask, because that kind of relationship, building a good relationship with a framer, is really helpful. So along with all of this stage, then, we've got the photography, the framing, the ceiling. You've got to record it. You've got to catalogue it. You've got to keep a reference of it. Marula has asked, what do you do about packaging when you're actually wrapping it up to send it out safely? So let's leave glass out of the picture as well.
Yeah.
Do you have fancy packaging?
No, and I wish that I did, and this is something I want to get better at. I don't. And I've had some things sent to me, some that were beautifully packaged and beautifully presented, and the difference in the feeling I got when I opened that compared to the ones that were just stuck in an envelope with enough, you know, solid stuff around it that they won't get damaged, the difference was huge.
So what was beautiful packaging? Tell us what was the...
It wasn't that amazing. It's just that it was well packaged up, but when I opened it, there was tissue paper which I opened up. There was a little handmade note card inside. There was a little sticker, I think, on the tissue paper. So it was professional. It looked like you bought an item of clothing from a lovely shop. Mm-hmm. And just opening it up felt really special. So my previous approach, and anybody who's bought from me will know this, was I'm very careful about putting together a good box, which I cobble together from boxes that we do a lot of online ordering, and I hate, you know, wasting all that. Mm-hmm. So I make my own packaging out of what I've got. I use a lot of filler in there, and usually I reuse again stuff that came in the packaging for stuff we've bought. But I wasn't putting anything else in there except a note from me. And it was just a note on a piece of paper. So the advance I made recently is to make handmade cards. So I have some cards just that I bought, stationery, you know, blank cards. And I make tiny little acrylic ink. I make big squares of them taped off to be tiny little pictures. I cut them into pictures and I make a handmade card, which I write on. Mm-hmm. But I still don't have nice packaging material for the actual painting. And so I still feel I'm missing a trick with the feeling you get when you receive it. And so the next time I have work for sale, that's a goal of mine. I want to really come up with a consistent and nice interior to the box. I don't mind if the box is just sturdy and put together from the boxes I find in my garage, because I think it's a waste to go buy new boxes. But I want what you get inside to feel lovely.
It's a little bit like a pass the parcel approach, isn't it? It's that when you get down to that finished layer, you want it to feel special. I'm with you, I think, on a lot of this. I also reuse all the packaging, the outside boxes, partly because when you go to the big packaging companies, you know, you need to buy 50 flat pack boxes of one size minimum. Well, A, I don't have the space to store that. B, I'm not sure that I'm going to get through 50 of a particular size. So it doesn't really make sense. But a lot of the boxes that you get from your art material supplies, you can reuse or cut down. So what I find is that, for example, the boxes that come around 60 centimeter panels, they're no good for sending off 60 centimeter frame panels. They don't fit. There isn't enough bumper zone in there. So you need to have boxes at different sizes, and I cut them down and I've flat packed them where I can, the boxes, and I keep them under the bed, down the side of the wardrobe, behind the sofa, and some now, the really big ones now are over at the studio, but I do keep the smaller ones still at home. So I'm totally with you on reusing that outside layer. The inside layer, I try to do a good job of each time I do it. So I've done various things. So, you know, using coloured string or raffia or hand-done tags, and then printed cards, all sorts of things, but I don't have a consistent approach to it. It might be consistent with that group of work because that's the material, you know, the packing materials that I've got. I think if you did something like, for example, ordered a particular colour of tissue paper, or, you know, that's going to make it feel quite special. That's the sort of thing that I've got, although I've got a whole ream of white tissue paper, so I don't know if that's going to be happening anytime soon. What is it about tissue paper? Why does tissue paper feel special when it's cheap as chips?
I don't know. I ordered a jumper dress and it came in a box, but when I opened the box, it was all wrapped in nice tissue paper with a little sticker. And I was like, "Oh, this is special." You can tell this didn't come from Asda.
You can find amazing things. It's worth having a dig around. You know, start with Amazon, but it doesn't have to be. The only reason I say Amazon is because there are lots of resellers on Amazon, so they will buy from the big packaging suppliers. Like I say, you have to buy minimum quantities, and it's often quite large minimum quantities. But within Amazon, people will resell, so maybe you can buy 3 or 5 boxes of a certain size. If you're doing small work, those book wraps, the Amazon-style book wraps that I'm sure we've all received, those can be quite useful for small pieces of work. But if nothing else, what that does is it shows you the construction. So basically, if you have a piece of cardboard wrapped one way and then a piece of cardboard wrapped the other way, as long as you have enough space inside and it's cushioned, that is going to be adequate. It doesn't have to be a fully formed, super fancy box. Pizza boxes, if you do square work at about that size, look up pizza boxes, because they're perfect, aren't they? Lovely,
yeah, that's
open closed
idea.
Lids. So yeah,
yeah,
possibly even work backwards. So yeah, what are we saying about packaging then? We could work a bit harder to improve that. Although having said that, I do think you can get excessive with it. I think you can go over the top with super fancy
stuff. I'm not in any danger. I'm not in any danger of that though. So
what are you going to do differently then?
So I think I'm definitely going to do some research into different ways people are packaging, and just see what's I like my handmade cards, so I'm fine with that. I need to be neat in my handwriting. I'm always in a rush to get it ready for the courier, and then it's like a scrawl, and I'd just like it to look as special as I feel the painting is. And you've invested a lot of money in it, it should be a luxury high-end feeling. So I'm not sure yet, but I just know I bought quite a few things during the artist support pledge, and that's when I saw the differences. And that's when often we have to experience it for ourselves on the other end, don't we? And then we realize, the way I sent out my artist support pledge pieces could have been better. And right. I would like to do better next time.
Yeah. Okay. Good points. We'll work on them. We'll let you know.
Yeah.
So lots of ideas there about finishing and presenting your work that's not really about painting at all, and yet it is, because that's the end point of paintings, is when it transfers from you to somebody else. So but I think it probably is worth just mentioning that you don't have to get all of these things perfect at the beginning. If I had worried at the beginning about whether or not I sent my paintings out with beautifully branded, color coordinated tissue paper and stickers, I don't think I would ever have done it. So you can layer up with these things. So each time, little improvement. What can I do? What do I have the capacity for next? Like Louise is thinking of. And at the end of the day, what's the most important thing is the work itself and getting it there safely. Right. So tell me, anything lovely to leave us with that we can think about as we go into the week ahead? What's inspired you?
Yes, I have a lovely letter, thank you to Griselda in my group, who posted this letter from Kurt Vonnegut. And what happened was, it says in 2006, a high school English teacher asked students to write to a famous author and ask for advice. Kurt Vonnegut was the only one to respond.
Wow.
And his response... Yeah, I know. And his response is magnificent. And here's what he wrote. Dear Xavier High School and Mrs. Lockwood, I thank you for your friendly letters. You surely know how to cheer up a really old geezer in his sunset years. I don't make public appearances anymore because I now resemble nothing so much as an iguana. What I had to say to you, moreover, would not take too long. To wit, practice any art, music, singing, dancing, acting, drawing, painting, sculpting, poetry, fiction, essays, reportage, no matter how well or badly, not to get money and fame, but to experience becoming, to find out what's inside you, to make your soul grow. And then he says, seriously, I mean, starting right now, do art and do it for the rest of your lives. Draw a funny or nice picture of Mrs. Lockwood and give it to her. Dance home after school and sing in the shower and on. Make a face in your mashed potatoes. Pretend you're Count Dracula. Here is an assignment for tonight, and I hope Miss Lockwood will flunk you if you don't do it. Write a 6-line poem about anything, but it must be rhymed. No fair tennis without a net. Make it as good as you possibly can, but don't tell anybody what you're doing. Don't show it or recite it to anybody, not even your girlfriend or your parents or Miss Lockwood. Then tear it up into teeny weeny pieces and discard them into widely separated trash receptacles. You will find that you have already been gloriously rewarded for your poem. You have experienced becoming, learned a lot more about what's inside you, and you have made your soul grow. God bless you all, Kurt Vonnegut. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah. Do you think he could send that to our education secretary?
Yes.
world be a different place.
Our schools thought that that was important. Well, I shouldn't say our schools. I know lots of our teachers do think that's important. Yeah. Only our education system thought that was important. But I love that idea of teaching kids at that age that it's not about showing it. Because I can remember doing a drawing and then running to my mom, like, look what I've done, look what I've done. And it's at that age when we start looking for approval, isn't it? And that stays with us then until we can finally rid ourselves of it, if we ever do.
I think it's a stage that you go through, actually. I mean, certainly it's a stage that you go through as children, but I think it's also something that you go through as adult, and working out what that line is for you about, you know, where you get your rewards and your approval. And I've mentioned before, you know, it's an important part of it for me. It still is. I'd be lying if I said that it wasn't. So I don't think that you should totally disregard it, but I think he's 100% right in that it shouldn't be your driver.
Yeah,
it's a great letter.
If it's your driver, you're missing so much.
I might just make mashed potato for supper tonight, just so that I can draw a face in it. I've never been one to play with my food that much, but
we can photograph. So, what's been good in your week?
I had a trip up to central London finally. So the Rebecca Hossack Gallery, which is in just north of Oxford Street. It's a really nice gallery space. I really like it. She has quite a strong link with Aboriginal art, but shows all types of different artists. And I could see that there's an exhibition of Morten Lassen's work, who I follow on Instagram. And I just thought, how nice, there it is. I don't have to do a timed appointment. I don't have to follow a one-way system. I know it's going to be a small enough space that I can just turn up and go. And of course, I was the only person in there. It was absolutely lovely. They were having a bit of a sort out. So upstairs was, there was work on the floor. There was different work on the walls, but it was so lovely. It's funny. There's a funny kind of magic, isn't there? When you've seen something on Instagram or on screens a lot, and we've all been doing a lot of that recently in particular, then when you see something in reality, it was fantastic. And I think it was lovely to stand in front of them. So his work has changed a lot. It started off being, he started off painting landscapes, but fairly quickly got into quite abstract interpretations. But the way that he uses colour has changed. And a lot of it apparently is to do with different viewpoints. So some of it is to do with looking down, and some of it is to do with different doorways and windows into things. So that there are these small, tiny fragments that are now appearing in the painting, which are to do with the way that we see things through a pixelated world. But you wouldn't necessarily know that from looking at the paintings. I'm just looking at them and feeling there is this lushness of build-up and colour. And some of the more recent ones, there's a more rigid grid structure in them, but you just never get the same impression from a photograph, from an image, that you do standing in front of the physical textural qualities of them. Was really great. So I enjoyed that. It was lovely being out. And also they had a huge still life that was maybe, I would say, 8 by 8 foot, textile collage, still life by an artist called Masuka Dopazzo. And that was lovely because I wasn't expecting to see that at all. I went seeing one thing and then there was this other thing. And I haven't done enough investigation into her yet, but she does also do not only still lives, but she does these beautiful sort of stitch drawn, as I say, it combines textiles of, there's a lot of people and there was a lot of kind of softness and love, but also activity within the surface of that painting. And that was also really inspiring, actually. It was just lovely to be out seeing work really again.
Oh, I'm glad you went out, because you've been putting off going, even though you wanted to.
And it was a bit sad from that point of view. It was a bit sad. It was funny. I said to my husband, I got home, I said, you know, I've lived in London all my life. I've been out in London at all times. I've lived in all different areas of London, dodgy areas, nice areas. And for the first time in the middle of the day, I felt slightly unsafe walking down side streets because it was so deserted. And that was sad because the London has been damaged, and it's very sad to see it. And I hope that we find a way to recover and come back from it. So thank you for joining us again for another week. We hope you have a lovely, happy, creative week ahead of you. If you are new to listening to the podcast, welcome. It's lovely to have you with us. And if you would like to find out more, you can visit both of our websites independently. We don't have an Art Juice website, but you can find all the details on louisefletcherart.com or, for me, alicesheridan.com. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Can you hear the Hoover?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, can't hear it.
Okay. Right, is that it?
It's always good to have a Hoover going that you're not pushing.
It's wonderful.